Welcome to Day Zero Update for August 31st, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brian Perkins.
And yeah, we've got a busy week of news.
Yep.
Yeah, we got a bunch of industry news, as a bunch of things have happened there.
Mm-hmm.
We got games coming out in the near future and a little further away, a couple of games delaying that were going to be out of the time of Silksong.
Yep.
Some other stuff that has happened here. We'll get to that stuff shortly. But before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I'll kick it off here. I've been playing more of The Rogue Prince of Persia, which, after the bit I played last week, I started having real runs. So like the notion that there wasn't any loot was wrong as I got to like my third, fourth, fifth runs. Similarly to, well, I guess not similarly to Dead Cells, which I think enemies could drop weapons and such, especially in chests and such. This kind of has the chest stuff going on. We can run into chests that will have any number of items for your main weapon, your secondary weapon, your ranged weapon, and trinkets that are sort of your perk stuff. But at a certain point, you may run out of space for that, but you can eventually unlock more, but you can also have those spots drop in chests, so there's kind of a way to expand that in the more near term kind of way, just for that run. But yeah, they try to have a decent bit of this with the, you know, damage stats and all that to them. And so much like a Dead Cells, new weapons you find often will come with a blueprint that you can start spending your souls on between runs. That kind of stuff that is very Dead Cells. And yeah, it kind of ended up making the experience feel very much like, oh, this is, you know, a Dead Cells sequel, but set in the world of Prince of Persia.
Ah.
Which is not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Though I think they also do better with the way that you get to different stages. Because like in Dead Cells, it was kind of fairly linear. You might have a branching path here and there that could go to like new areas that they would add in, but this seems to have more ways to kind of get around this map they show that has like 8 to 10 locations in it, and probably expands from there as you get further into the game. But I did start at like different areas than the camp is the first one you get to, which is sort of the outer skirts of the city. But I could go to like the Huns camp kind of thing that is full with more enemies and such, and more, you know, opportunities to get souls and gold and other stuff. You do find rooms in the background that you can go into that are kind of the extra areas that you would find in Dead Cells, where you might do like a platforming challenge or a combat challenge, or just find a merchant down there or something like that. They have different things like that that you can deal with. And I managed to beat the first boss, which kind of has a little bit of Hades to it, where you kind of, the characters are aware that they've fought multiple times, but I don't think the dialogue really changed all that much to acknowledge that in a really obvious way. But the boss fight is pretty neat, as you have to use the wall running stuff to run over attacks, which works out pretty well for that game. And it's a pretty fun boss fight, but yeah, I don't think I ever got to the second one yet, but I'll keep putting some more time into this and seeing where I go with it. But yeah, you kind of get back to your camp at the end of runs, and I've added a couple people to my camp. One that adds essentially challenges for killing, you know, X amount of certain types of enemies that then gets you souls and other currencies. And then once you do that, it gives you a second challenge for those enemies. It's usually like kill them a certain way, which you can, you know, try to make a focus or just let it happen naturally when you randomly do things at these enemies. I don't know that they make it super easy to find the stuff in the runs, but yeah, I was like, okay, this is neat. And then I got a person that can make new outfits for you, which generally is pretty simple with just using souls for a different sort of color swap type stuff. But you can also get essentially new skins that are versions of bosses and other characters in the game, kind of stuff that I think requires a bit more stuff to do. You might have to beat the bosses, you know, a certain amount of times to make that stuff available to unlock that kind of stuff. So there's that, and that's about it, I think, really, for what I've learned in this sort of next few hours I've played of the game. But it's pretty neat, and yeah, it's on pretty much, I think, PlayStation, Xbox, and PC, and it's on PlayStation Plus and Game Pass, so worth checking out if you want to see how Dead Cells easy it is.
Mm-hmm.
Just got a lot of that vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's that, and then I got the expansion for Kirby and the Forgotten Land that essentially adds a new campaign to it, though it is... It bolts it onto the main game's campaign. I think it's called Star-Crossed Worlds. That is pretty cool. So to access it, you have to beat the first boss. So you have to finish the first world of stages. And then it sort of throws more into it. Essentially, takes over... Essentially offers like an alternate... version of two stages from that world, and it starts in the same area that the regular stage does, but then diverts to new areas to do you know, different things and do some more cool stuff to it. Can be a little bit confusing having not played the game since for a couple years since it came out, which is confusing a couple places. Like the mall level is really cool, but there are these areas where I could go in this other direction. I don't know if there would have been anything there for just go on the regular path. I would assume it would tell you to go away, but it seemed to keep going for a bit. But then it has like a little map near the beginning of that stage. It's like, oh, you need to go this way kind of thing. And if you can't figure it out, there's another area that will give you the rest of the map. But yeah, these new areas are, you know, fully built in 4K enhanced visuals and resolution in that. It doesn't look like a totally different game because the original game looked so good, but now it just runs better, looks a little bit sharper and all that. And I think that's a pretty good bonus to the game. But the it's two stages per you know, with the new set of like goals you want to do during that playthrough. Oftentimes a little bit tougher than the main game was. I had a couple that I missed that were basically like, oh, don't get hit by this particular enemy, or don't die to this boss kind of thing. And it's like, oh, and it doesn't tell you until the end of the stage, so it's like, oh, we'll have to play that again later to get that last thing. And so you're collecting a new currency that is called, I don't think it's called Starries, versus the DDD or the Waddle Dees that you're collecting. These are like these little star creatures that are locked in this like icy crystal looking thing. And kind of the conceit is almost a bit like Superman Returns in terms of this, that in that it was a kryptonite crystal that they tossed into the ocean to create new landmass. This was kind of this crystal meteorites that broken up into a bunch of pieces crashes into these stages and kind of turns a good chunk of them into like cool sci-fi crystal looking thing. Adds new areas and all that. And you get a little bit of new landmass. There's like this underwater volcano that it crashes into that sort of bubbles up to the sea. And you're kind of trying to collect as many stars as you can to convert this. There's like meteorite that's heart-shaped. That's like a dark crystal kind of thing. Cover it with the good crystals to keep it from doing whatever bad thing it can do. I've gotten like 4 or 5 stages in, so I'm like in the third world of it so far, and it's just been as good as the original game, and even a little bit more because they've added 3 new mouthful modes, if you remember that part of the original game, where Kirby sucks in some object, then creates a new form of Kirby that can do new gameplay things. Well, just like in the original, it was like a car. You could get what was it? It's like a hoop that he could blow into that could float around, kind of stuff. Bunch of weird stuff like that. Here, they've added a big spring that he swallows up, and then he can jump pretty high and also do like a ground pound with it. That is pretty cool. I forget what the other new things are. Let me see. There's the pipe returns. That's a new thing. The new one is there's a gear that you get that essentially lets him, roll around, but also lets him wall climb. So he gets onto walls that he can sort of climb up. Then he can kind of do dashes off of them to other parts of the wall to grab onto. Kind of thing that's pretty neat. I think the last one that I've not seen yet is like a folding sign that you might have on a sidewalk for like a little restaurant shop or cafe or something like that, that you can swallow up, and he uses that to slide down slopes and do spin attacks. So that's a neat addition of some new things that give some cool additional bonuses, bonus areas. And they build challenge around some of that stuff where like there's like a tough area, side area you can run into that you have to kind of keep spitting out the spring. And you have, I think, the pencil ability that lets you go underground and come back out to get like under fences and then come back up and then swallow the spring again so you can keep jumping through. I think that's one of those areas where you're not supposed to die in if you want to get all the starries. And I fell into the water at one point because I couldn't keep up. So that's cool. They had 2 new story-based Waddle Dees. There's Astronomer Waddle Dee, and I forget what the other one is. But he just basically, in a fun way, just says like, "Oh, I found the new stage." It just instantly sends you there to start it, so you don't have to go wander around the stage open world area. You kind of wander around and just pick different stages. It just sends you like, "Here's the new one," and just sends you there immediately, which is pretty good to make that a bit more simple. But the Astronomer Waddle Dee has his own gacha system, which is not like the little machines that you find in the back area of the home base. It's literally just a box he has you pick stuff out of, almost like a blind box. And there's like gachas related to the new characters and such, because there's a lot of new enemies that are basically like, "Oh, here's the crystal form of them," and they're tougher, more challenging to beat, as well as just some new objects and bosses and such that you get to face. You get some bosses that are repeats, but they're crystal form. So like the big walrus guy, that's pretty fun. He gets a big crystal beard and becomes tougher to beat, kind of stuff. So I'm looking forward to playing some more of this. But yeah, it's really cool addition to the game. So if you already have Kirby and the Forgotten Land, this is $20 for the upgrade, which I think is pretty well worth it. Otherwise, if you don't, you gotta spend $80 for the whole package. So it's I think the third $80 game they've released so far, with this not Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, and Mario Kart 8. But yeah, well worth checking out if you like the original game and still have access to it to get this expansion. But there's that, and then the last game I'm playing more of is Hollow Knight, as Silksong is about 4 or 5 days away now. I've been like hunkering down and like looking at the map and also looking up some wiki stuff because. I would say for as good as this game is, it is also really bad about letting you know anything. If you run into characters that advance certain storylines and such, and you take a break from the game, you can easily just forget about that stuff and just run into characters who are like, oh yeah, you met my brother and all this, and they're like, yeah, sure. I definitely remember that. And like little quest lines and such that are easy to forget about, or not even notice if you aren't paying close attention to everything you're every dialogue you're seeing and every thing you're picking up and all that. I activated something that involved me going to one area and then finding a character's dead body and then hitting it with the dream nail that then caused this other area nearby to light up in flames, red flames. Then I got back to the home area, and they had their own tents near where all the buildings were set up. And they're like, oh, you called us in. It's like, yeah, definitely. That's definitely what I was doing. I didn't just hit things and activate something I didn't realize I was doing. It's got very much got the that's very much like the Souls aspect of this game, where it doesn't really keep track of anything for you. You just have to kind of either look it up and look up a map to see like where things are at and like where you might be leaving off at. So I've been making a lot of progress in all that stuff. I've killed a number of fun bosses. One in particular that I really like is a guy called the Dung Defender, who makes a lot of fun noises while you're getting closer to him. And then you face him, and he's like, oh, you're coming to kill, whoever, and then fights you. And I think afterwards realizes that you're a good guy, you fought with honor. And is like apologetic about that, but also, very respectful of you, and all that. But yeah, I've been looking up things like, well, what the hell do I do with, these wanderers' journals and these rancid eggs I'm finding, and it's like finding out like it's kind of not a thing you really need to worry about. It's like some of the stuff you can sell for more geos, and I don't need geos at this point. I have like 5,000 geos and nothing to really spend it on at the moment. So basically any point I run into somebody who's like, oh, I need some geos for this thing, and I'm like, yeah, sure, I got plenty for you, whatever you need. And hope they give me something good in return. I did have to find out. I got pale ore, which is something you use to upgrade your weapon, your nail. And I was like, where the fuck do I go with this pale ore to do the upgrade? Because on the map screen, it's not going to really give you any details of what these merchants are that are around the map. Just you have to go there enough to remember it. And so, yeah, I found where he was and got that upgraded, so I'm now doing some more damage. I'm up to like 8 pips of health. And yeah, kind of just going around the map, doing some stuff. I found one boss, or a series of bosses, is like these five dudes, I think, that get resurrected, and they just kind of one show up if you don't kill them pretty quickly. Another one spawns in and then just kind of keeps going. Gonna get overwhelming at a certain point, but all they do is they do a dash roll, or they do a bounce roll, or they do some regular attacks. It's a lot of these enemies are not super complicated in terms of their attacks. It's just learning their patterns and how you need to avoid them. But you can run into a number of enemies that are like, well, this is probably one I should be at later on because they're doing some wild shit that I can't counter or anything. But at this point, I've run into like all the nail masters who teach you new moves. I got double jump now. I beat failed knight, something like that. It's like a malformed knight. Like I read in the lore, like, oh, your knight is basically a form of, I forget what they call it, like a vessel. That's what it is. Like a vessel with void inside their shell. And Hornet, who's the star of Silk Song, is your like stepsister or half sister or something like that. But yeah, a lot of these bosses are various forms of vessels that are either super powered or do weird stuff or sometimes malformed, that kind of stuff. So neat kind of looking up some of this stuff because like you don't really get much of it in the game itself. Outside of, I guess the journal kind of has that, but it also has like 100 enemies on it, so it's tough to kind of go through it with any sort of fine-tooth comb. A lot of it starts to glaze over whenever I try and look through it. But yeah, that's a game's really good. I'm definitely going to keep playing it until Silk Song comes out. I don't expect to beat it, but I did find a lot of fun stuff there. I think it's also a game that's very much dead set in its ways, the way that it hands things out, dealing with quests and where you need to go and all that. That's very much got a lot of the Souls aspect to it. That's maybe the one downfall it has, is it's real bad about telling you what you were trying to do and all that. You take a break or anything. So a lot of people are kind of all focused on coming back to the game after a long time. Largely, probably should just start over if you can't just wander around and figure out the last thread of what you were doing and why. Yeah, that's pretty much it. So yeah, what have you been doing, Brandon?
Well, first and foremost, I played and I finished the demo for Trails in the Sky first chapter. And first and foremost, I can tell you this is probably the best looking game that Falcom has put out to date. Like, this actually looks like a game that was made for modern consoles. And that's not to say, you know, like, for example, like the last couple of, you know, Daybreak games have looked pretty good. Like, they're definitely like visually superior to like what the Cold Steel games look like. But there's still just a hint of the jankiness in it that you can just see. Where it looks like they're still running with the same engine that they've been using for the Cold Steel games. It's just, it looks slightly prettier because, you know, they had more, you know, they had more to work with the, you know, PS4 and PS5. But this one legit looks like a current gen Falcom game. The colors are lush. The character animations are really good. They look natural. It's not just, you know, flat land in every direction that you go to. There's all kind, you know, the terrain is varied and leveled. And yeah, it looks legitimately beautiful. Like, this is going to be a lot of people's first exposure to the original Trails in the Sky story. And honestly, they couldn't find a better version than the actual game itself, the original, anyway. As far as, like, everything else, like, the story-wise, it's pretty much a beat-for-beat recreation of the original game. Right down to most of the dialogue, a lot of the missions and the layout of the various towns and stuff, pretty much an exact replica. Just, you know, it looks a lot prettier. And, like, I have been told, or at least I have been hearing from people, that apparently that certain different versions of the game use different translations. Honestly, I don't really notice anything different other than the fact that, it doesn't seem as stilted as some of the original translation was for back for the original version. People are also talking about like some kind of censorship or something. I ain't seen any of that yet. Like Scheherazade is still got that whole dominatrix thing going for her. It's just, her she has more varied dialogue now. Her like primary major attack is her basically going all crazy with a whip. Like it's nothing really different. But as far as like the actual like combat goes, the gameplay, it's very close to what the like what they've been doing for the last couple of Trails games, where it's it's a fairly standard action RPG in the overworld, but you can cut to turn-based anytime you want. So it does have that. It's a great game. It's still like if they can keep it going for the entire game, I'm absolutely getting this as soon as it comes out, if I can afford it. I will say though, again, because this is going to be a lot of people's like first exposure to Trails in the Sky story, guys like me who have played that game in its original form years ago, there's just part of me that really has to bite their tongue because I know how this story's gonna go, and I know what some of these characters are capable of. And it's probably gonna surprise a lot of people. But yeah, other than that, I'm also playing Sly 3 still. And I had forgotten to mention this last time. For whatever reason, Sucker Punch decided to put like this weird like 3D glasses gimmick for the third Sly Cooper game. I don't know why. It doesn't add anything to the game at all. And all it really does is just sort of like a just it brings up like a simple inconvenience, really. But it's still, it's probably the most polished of the original trilogy. It's, they basically took everything from the first two games and made it better. The fact that you can like play multiple characters, which I mean, you could already do that in Sly 2, but now you can play more than just the base three. There's the other ones. And just a bunch of other stuff. It's still a damn good game. And I'm a pretty good ways into it now. I still got like one more member I gotta recruit before we can do the big heist, but yeah, I'm a pretty good ways into it now. And the other thing I'm playing, and I'm actually writing my review also at the same time, and hopefully that'll be done by the end of this week. Probably before Wednesday, because I ain't got that much further to go. Is Off. And Off, this is a remaster of a game that was originally made with RPG Maker way back in the aughts. It was originally a freeware game that came out in 2008, made by a small Belgian group of amateur developers that ended up sort of becoming like this hugely influential cult title. That if you've playing a bunch of like modern indie RPGs that exist now, like Undertale or Amori or Fear and Hunger or Lisa, all those games are heavily inspired by what these guys originally did with Off. And when you play it, like it's got a very minimalist approach to it. Its story is like very cryptic and it doesn't really reveal a lot about itself. It does it very slowly. Essentially what you're doing is you're controlling this character who calls himself the Batter. He's literally dressed in like old-timey baseball uniform clothes and he carries around a baseball bat, which is his primary weapon, and he's essentially on a mission to purge the world of specters. And in this case, they are literally specters. They're ghosts or things that are possessed by ghosts or a big group of ghosts or things that are creating the ghost, stuff like that. And it's not a difficult game and it's not a long game, but it is one that is challenging. It's not hard, like super duper hard, but do not let its simple interface fool you. It can get difficult when it wants to, especially in the combat department, because there are a couple of fights in this that are essentially a war of attrition. But the actual like universe that it takes place in is extremely bizarre, vaguely dreamlike. It's really hard to describe because you're ascend, you know, to describe it in words, because otherwise it just sounds like nonsense. Basically, it's entirely inhabited by these beings called Ellisons, and they're almost exactly every single one of them are a look alike. Like they look like shivery, bald office workers that are like been stuck in a cubicle all day. They're like jittery and they're nervous and they don't really know what they're supposed to do. They're always depending on some higher authority to tell them what they got to do. Like they're stuck in like this endless bureaucracy. And basically, you're going through like the various zones in this world, trying to, again, purge it of specters and eventually go up to like the big boss of that world, which is where, you know, you fight them. But like, as it gets really ominous as the game goes on, because you start to realize that there's this weird shit that's happening underneath it. And there's also the fact that when you start the game actually asks you what your name is. And when you take control of the batter will actually, in like one of the first major dialogues you have in this game, will name you and actually acknowledge your existence and that you're the one who's controlling them. Just keep that in mind as the game goes on, because it's kind of a big deal. But yeah, that's basically what I've been playing.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. And first up here, we have the new PlayStation Plus Essential lineup for the month. That'll be available on, I believe, the 2nd here. And it's got some really good games. First up here for the PS4, Psychonauts 2. Yeah, very good sequel to the original game with more kind of going on story-wise, as it's post the VR game and all that, and they are kind of figuring out sort of what to do as the big Psychonauts organization. You get to kind of go in a number of times, dealing with various fires and such that are going on, and yeah, end up in some really cool places. Well, at least outside of that first stage with the mouth and the teeth and all that. That's kind of icky, but yeah. Outside of that, it does a lot of fun stuff.
Yeah, Psychonauts 2, that game was is really good. It definitely like took like a lot of the issues the original game did and fixed a lot of them. It's a lot more easier to do. That said, the platforming parts can still be really touch and go. But yeah, that first part with like the whole dentist thing and all the weird like tongue and teeth stuff, yeah, it's very unsettling.
And I do kind of wish Microsoft wasn't in their fuck around shit phase here with this game, because it's only a PS4 version. There should be a PS5 version at this point.
There should be.
But they like, oh, this is good. 1080p, 60 FPS and all that. It's like, yeah, that's great. It's like, yeah, I guess so, but on Xbox it's got full Xbox Series X and S support and all that. All they did really here was unlock the frame rate, I believe. So, it doesn't look quite as good, but still a good game either way.
Oh yeah.
And then next up here might be the game that people would say is even better for the
Oh yeah.
PS4, Stardew Valley.
Yep.
The game that kind of unleashed a genre upon the masses as the cozy farming game
Yeah.
mixed with, action stuff in the mines.
Yeah.
Kind of came a staple that everybody kind of copied
Yeah.
for a bunch of different themes and such. So.
Yeah. Although, funny enough, even though it's supposed to be a cozy game, there's definitely an element of stress involved since all the produce and stuff you're growing is seasonal, and the minute it changes seasons, all that shit rots on the vine. It's but yeah, otherwise, yeah, that game is fantastic.
Yeah. But for me, the uncozy part is, oh God, who has a birthday and what's the item I should get for them and how do I even get that?
Yeah.
And do that all right, because if I don't, I can't fuck it up or else I have to wait a whole fucking year.
Yeah. Only sad thing is, though, is because this is console, you can't get, like, the all the mods and stuff for it, because this game is amazing on its own. It is transcendent with the mods.
Yeah. Although I imagine a lot of people own it on multiple platforms.
Oh, yeah.
I think I have it on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I haven't played it enough to justify that.
Mm.
It's like, oh, it's here. I can buy it here. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Xbox version, I don't think I've ever started it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'll buy that. I'll play it at some point. Mm. I never did. But
yeah.
Concerned Ape also announced the new update for that game is coming.
Mm-hmm.
At some point. I think literally like a MS Paint style image he posted on his account.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, we're doing 1.7. Whenever.
Yep.
Because you can't stop.
Yeah. I mean, even though he's working on another game.
Yeah.
Yep, here it is. There will be a Stardew Valley 1.7 update. Yeah, he posted it yesterday.
Yeah. I saw them. People were like, oh, great. I was like, what is it? And he's like, not going to say anything yet.
Nope.
Just basically like, that's, we're working on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There's that. And the last one is also a really good game for PS5 and PS4, Viewfinder.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I would say, a first-person puzzle game where you are somebody that has this kind of retro-style viewfinder camera that you can use to take pictures and implant them on the world to allow you to solve puzzles and such and get around in wild ways. That is really well done. Yeah, it's got a bit of like Portal to it and all that, as there's neat little like conspiracies going on behind the scenes as you're trying to solve these puzzles and find out the nature of what you're doing there and all that. But yeah, it's just a really fun game with a lot of cool gimmicks and mechanics to it. That's well worth checking out if you like that kind of game. So yeah, that is going to be another great addition to this lineup here. And yeah, that's three great games there.
Yeah. I've played already Psychonauts 2. I'm still playing Stardew Valley here on my PC. Psychonauts 2 is a great game. As somebody who really likes the original Psychonauts, it's definitely better than the first one, but it still has some of the issues that hindered the original, specifically with the platforming, like I mentioned. It's not as bad as the original one was, because the original one was downright, like, it was very 50-50.
Yeah.
But it's a lot easier this time, but there are still definitely parts of it where it can be hard to tell exactly where you're going. Stardew Valley, I can already sing that game's praises from here, there, and everywhere. It's an amazing game, and it still is, even in its base version. I have not played Viewfinder, but I really think I need to, because this looks great.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and...
I highly recommend it.
Yeah. Let's see. I want to see when these are... Let's see, it's September 2nd, so Tuesday. All right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that's one you should check out.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of things to check out that just keep getting updates, No Man's mm-hmm. Sky.
Yep.
They announced the release of Voyagers.
Yep.
Their update 6.0, which, yeah, I was playing some of this because I was like, how far away am I to being able to do any of this?
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm still a good bit aways from it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the big part of this is that you can you know, customize your own, I think they call it the Corvette class starship. Assemble it piece by piece, allowing full creative freedom over the design. Select and arrange every section of hull, every wing, and peripheral, every internal corridor and bunk bed. Although what a Corvette class ship is in No Man's Sky, I'm not 100% sure yet. But yeah, it's really cool that they're allowing this kind of thing. Yeah, you can actually go out into space in your space suit and kind of float around for a bit to kind of go maybe into different parts of your ship if you have different entrances and whatnot and all that. Yeah, they have, let's see, yeah, habitation modules and a bunch of stuff like that you can put in your ship. Yeah, and strategically placed padding you can put down in the case of sudden gravitational changes and all that. Yeah, so let's see. You can get out of the pilot's seat and walk around your ship while it's moving, I assume. Yeah, without leaving the ship itself, so you can kind of walk around and see what your crew's doing and whatnot. Which I know you could do in the big freighters. But I assume the Corvette stuff is a step down from that. But yeah, there's a Corvette Expedition they're adding in here. So that's neat. There's a Titan class cockpit. Yeah, the militaristic Titan class cockpit, richly detailed with panels of buttons and gauges, light up displays, and additional screens.
Yep.
Let's see. Yeah, you can kind of teleport to your friends around based, you know, into your ship or from planet to planet if you need to look for whatever you're looking for. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff here. Yeah. Looks really neat. I was jumping into this and I found out, you know, like one of the big things early on is the Atlas passes. Those are on the Anomaly now. It's like the blueprints you can get and unlock. You just need the materials to craft them versus having to go through the story stuff to unlock them. But it's just like, oh, great. I don't have to necessarily go through all this story stuff just to find this thing. And unlock those random barrels that need it and those back rooms of some of the buildings and all that. Oh, and they also added a Mecha Mouse companion. Little like robot mouse looking thing, which looks neat. So yeah, that's cool. A lot of cool stuff being added here. They're adding PSSR support for PSVR2, which is cool. I don't know that anybody else has done that yet for the PS5 Pro version. So yeah, that looks neat. Yeah, there's jetpacks and a bunch of other shit here that they're adding into the game. Oh yeah, they made the Twitch drops more easily enabled. Yeah, I went and got a bunch of them, and then it replaced my ship that had a bunch of shit on it. I have to go get my ship back. So that's fun. But there you go. More No Man's Sky content to enjoy. Let's see, what else is out now? Oh yeah, Fear Effect released. Kind of unceremoniously, just released on PSN, Switch, and PC.
Yeah.
Now for $10. It seems to be done by the team that does the PS Plus Premium retro emulation stuff. So the PS1 and PSP and PS2 stuff. So it's got a lot of that rewind and save states and that kind of stuff in there. But otherwise, it's not some huge undertaking with, you know, a bunch of extra features and all that. But yeah, Fear Effect was kind of a landmark game that I don't think sold super well or anything. It was kind of one of those games where it was like an early version of like cel shading.
Yeah.
To it that looked really good, especially in, you know, screenshots and the marketing stuff they did for that game.
Also because like its overall like tone was like really all over the place. It had like, it was more or less like a survival horror game, but like it was heavily like going around on like cyberpunk and like old Chinese mysticism and like all this. It was totally all over the place. Honestly, the one thing about this franchise that makes it stand out was the fact that it was kind of pioneering in having a openly queer protagonist. Because the sequel we find out is like a prequel to the original, and we find out that one of the major that Hannah, one of the major figures that you play in the first game, she had a girlfriend named Rain who was like playable in the in that game. And yeah. Like we're talking like the late 90s, so that's kind of a big deal.
Of course, the magazine advertising for it was like, aha, you like girl on girl? We got that.
It was the 90s.
Oh yeah, that was the kind of one of the more notable ways that they are like, oh yeah, these girls like each other. To a sexy degree. All that, so yeah. But yeah, this is just the first one. I assume the second one will come at some point, but yeah. Thing I didn't know about this one is that it has a lot of FMV to it. That was interesting to find out. Maybe I'll get it at some point. But I'm not gonna grab it right now. But there's that. And yeah, for more September stuff, we found out that Acclaim, if you remember, they are existing again.
Yeah, they actually coming back, it kinda sort of in a way.
Yeah, they announced a Play Acclaim showcase that will be happening on September 10th, which I think would be a Wednesday, at 11:30 a.m. Pacific time, 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. Which is, they will reveal new surprises, exclusive content, and announcements you won't want to miss. Yeah, posted like a teaser video on YouTube about coming back, having some new announcements soon. This was the announcement, I guess, that they're gonna have more announcements. So there's that. I'm curious to see what it is, but I think mostly it's gonna be indie stuff that they're publishing because they don't have any properties really, so unless they're partnering with the companies that do have those properties, there's not really a ton there, retro kind of stuff that they can do. So there's that. I don't know that I expect them to be as savvy as Atari has been for the past couple of years, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, also happening in September, Skate will finally be coming out. The free-to-play game will be launching in early access on September 16th. For PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. I believe it will be free to play from the start of early access, so I don't think you have to spend any money, but I'm assuming they will have like deluxe editions, founder editions, or whatever to get in. But yeah, this has been in like play testing for a good while, a year or so. I've seen some positive stuff about this. It looks pretty neat. But I guess if you're way into like the story stuff they did for Skate games, that probably isn't going to be as big of a part of this. But if you like the sandbox skating stuff, it seems like a big part of what they're doing here, with plenty of monetization for clothing stuff, I believe. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this, see what it is. So yeah, there's that. For people to enjoy. Yeah, we got our first delay from the ravages of Silksong's release. The thing that people are trying to paint as like an anti-consumer release with Silksong. Like, they should have given people heads up, devs and all that heads up. And it's like, I don't know that they really have to on that front, because you know, just like anybody, they're releasing their game when they need to. But Baby Steps from Devolver Digital was one of those games coming out September 8th, the following week, and they decided to delay it a bit to September 23rd. Not really a huge surprise, but a little bit disappointing. But I think at this point, with this kind of thing, is that Indie games are already walking like a tightrope in trying to find a good release date that will hopefully help them sell well enough to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And when you got something like Silksong that's guaranteed to probably sell, I would maybe see a couple million at launch, considering it's the most wishlisted game on Steam. And you don't want to necessarily run into that buzzsaw if you don't have to. There are some devs and publishers that are willing to, and that's, you know, fine. They mm-hmm. can. Just see what else is, like, Hell Is Us is coming out this week still. And it's like, that's got a bit of a bigger publisher to it, so I'm not really too surprised by that. You might consider Devolver Digital a bigger publisher, and it's like, yeah, to a degree, especially that they're, you know, publicly traded.
Mm-hmm.
Like Hiragami, which is published by Kakashi Games, or Kakehashi Games, which is made by Bandai Namco Studios, which is interesting. They put up a fun little announcement of like, we're staying put. But they were like, we got an important announcement about our release dates, and then saying, we're staying put on September 3rd. It's like, all right, cool. Best of luck. That's September 3rd. What else is this week here? Yeah, Dark Deity 2. It was like, we're staying put. But they've been out on Steam for quite a while. They're just releasing their Switch version now. So yeah, like Star Wars Outlaws 2 is releasing that same day on the Switch 2. And it's like, yeah, it's on the Switch 2. Star Wars doesn't necessarily have to worry about Silksong. They'll sell what they sell there. But yeah, Chronos the New Dawn is out the 5th. NBA 2K26 is out the 5th. NBA 2K doesn't have to worry about anything. They're the big fish here. Silksong is like on the next step down. But yeah, all these others are just staying put, seems like. But maybe we'll get some announcements this week as people start to see what that could be, what that launch could be. But yeah. Maybe Steps is delayed a few weeks, which sucks, but I can wait for it. That's one game I'm really excited for this month. So there's that. And then, yeah, we got here in October, Yuka Replayly has been announced to mm-hmm. launch on October 9th.
Yep.
That'll be on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, Switch 2, and PC
mm-hmm.
for $30. I believe if you have the previous version on... I think PS4, Xbox One, and Switch, you would get an upgrade or option, or no, they're doing a discount, 30% off discount. So you can get it for, I think it would be $20.99 or $21 instead, which seems pretty decent for how much work they're putting into improving this game and changing a little bit about it. Yeah, because they had added a bunch of new mini-games and such, new collectibles, and other stuff like that. So, definitely doing a decent amount of work to that game.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. That's an October game.
Mm. Yep. And I hope that they're going to get around to... I mean, did you play the original?
I played like an hour or two, and I was like, yeah, this seems like what this game... was going to be.
Yeah, it's like they were advertising like, yeah, this is going to be like a throwback to the old collectathon type 3D platformers. And then it came out and people were shocked that it was a throwback to old style 3D collectathon platformers.
Yeah. That was very much like, I didn't play those games really because they didn't control that well for me.
Yeah. But
so at least
yeah.
control a little bit better, but
mm-hmm.
not enough that it really changed my mind on that
mm-hmm.
style of Rare collectathon platformer.
Right.
But yeah, that'll be neat to see.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got here Lumines Arise. Will yep. be out November 11th. Mm-hmm. And it has a demo that's out now until the 3rd, I think.
Yeah, so Wednesday.
Yeah, single player and multiplayer demo.
Mm-hmm.
That features a small portion of the game to check out. Which is cool. I'm looking forward to this. This is a big November release for me. It'll be out, yeah, for $40
mm-hmm.
And all that. So, yeah, that looks like it's going to be really good. I have not played the demo yet. I'll probably play it tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe make a video for our YouTube channel. But Phil has an article on our website right now. It's a sort of a preview with a bit of a focus on accessibility stuff he sees that looks good and needs improved. So, go check that out on the website. So
yeah,
there you go. But yeah, so it includes three stages for the single player, and then one of the multiplayer modes, Burst Battle. It's cross platform. PS5 and Steam. So there's that. That's well worth checking out. They also have a special edition or a deluxe edition. That includes extra avatars and such. So that's cool. Yeah, there you go. And then the last thing here, another delay. Demon's Skull was also going to come out the 4th, I believe.
Yep.
To which the dev team posted like a little joke. You're like, we're staying. And then their publisher's like, no, we're not. And then moved it to November 19th.
Yeah.
Which sucks for the devs, especially because they had review codes out there.
Yeah.
I think for the Steam version. So
mm-hmm.
I assume those people will get more time to play through it. So.
Yep.
That's good for that, but yeah, everybody else kind of has to wait a bit.
Yeah.
I don't blame them, because this is a game that's been delayed quite a bit. And
yeah.
Getting Silk Song dropped on your release date is not exactly what they were hoping for, I assume.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, we got a couple things coming out next year. Ease, Memoir, Revelations, and Kelsetta. This is one of the is this the Vita game that is finally gets a release here for the Switch in the West in early 2026. This is kind of more of that. Yeah, they released a PS4 version and PC, then Vita way back in the day for this game. So that's interesting to see. Yeah, I forget which Ease game this is. I know Kelsetta. I'm trying to look on a wiki page for it. Okay, is this number 4? That makes sense. All right. So yeah, that looks neat. More Ease, especially the older Ease games. That are still pretty fun, but they are a little more arcadey than what like the modern ones are.
Yeah.
A little less story, but more focused on just fucking shit up. Which it has its own nice feel to it.
Yep.
Let's see what else. The other game here was a game that was delayed, which is all it does, replaced. This got announced at, I have to look and see when the first one is. I think it's got announced at an Xbox showcase. Back in 2021, then got delayed to 2023, and then I think just didn't hit that and just went to we're gonna come out later mode, and got announced last year that it was being delayed to 2025.
Yep.
And now as a tradition, they're like, well, we're not gonna hit that, so we're hoping to release spring 2026. At least that's the time frame. But yeah, this is one of those games that has been in the works for quite a while, looks really good, and all that. But yeah, we'll have to see how it looks when it actually releases, because
it's
been, you know, three, four years since it was supposed
Seriously.
To
be released. Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see how this goes.
Mm-hmm.
But good to see a proof of life, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, there you go. Let's see. Next up, Ninja Gaiden 4 is the new cover for Game Informer.
Yep.
For next month. So they'll be having that ready for the game's launch. And yeah, it's been a game that people have been excited about. I've also seen some of the previews that are very much like, yeah, they really like it, or they're a little disappointed because it feels more like a Platinum Games action game versus what you would expect out of a Ninja Gaiden 4.
Well, the original, like the the Ninja Theory type of Ninja Gaiden games, they're first of all, they're difficult. They're famous. Like the Ninja Gaiden games, even like the OG ones, were famously like super difficult. And the more modern ones are very much still difficult, just a different kind of. And very technique heavy. But yeah, this one is more in line with like what a Platinum Studios action game would be like, which depending on how you look at it, that's either a good thing or it's a bad thing. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think you meant Team Ninja, not Ninja Theory.
Yeah.
That
Team
gets a
Ninja.
little.
I get those mixed up sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah,
Because remember,
but yeah.
Ninja Theory hasn't made a game like this in like a decade now.
Yeah.
Especially now that they're owned by Microsoft.
Yep.
They're probably not allowed. But yeah. That'll be neat to see. Some more about that going up to its launch. So there's that. Then next up here is some more industry news. Atari has announced that they've acquired the rights to five Ubisoft properties.
Yep.
Probably not any of the five that you would want
Yeah.
to be freed from Ubisoft. They ended up buying five of their smaller games.
Yeah.
There's Cold Fear, which I believe was like a PS2 survival horror game
Yep.
that was pretty decent from what I've heard. Basically, I've heard it described as like, what if Resident Evil 4 was on a boat?
Yep.
That's what they made. So there's that. They also acquired I Am Alive. Which was that, speaking of games that got delayed a lot, I Am Alive was one of those that was like a big survival game
Yep.
that got delayed a bunch. It was sort of set in the wake of a natural disaster in a big city, and you're kind of trying to escape and all that. And it was pretty neat once it did come out, but
Yeah.
probably not as good as it the potential of it. There's that. They also acquired Child of Eden.
Yep, that is the what's his name?
Tetsuya Mizuguchi game.
Yep. So, very rhythm heavy on rail shooter.
Yeah, kind of a follow-up to Rez
Yep.
from Q Entertainment when that existed. I imagine they're acquiring this so they can hire Enhance to make a new version of this for PS5, PSVR2, and PC and all that. It was a really good looking game and all that. It just maybe suffered from being a Kinect launch exclusive. Then got a PlayStation Move version like a year or so later or something, a few months later, something like that. It was kind of like one of those games that came a little bit late to the party there. I think would do a lot better nowadays when these kind of games are much more common, especially after Res Infinite. Show the potential of them on VR and all that, so that could be very much something that happens at some point. And they also acquired the rights to Grow Home and Grow Up, these sort of adventure platformers that Ubisoft Reflections made that were really cool small games that Ubisoft made back in the day in like the early part of the PS4, Xbox One generation that were games you could finish in a couple of hours. And had really cool ideas of where you were activating these like plant bulbs and then following the growth of the like the flower into other structures and such to get around. You could also get like a good little like parachute thing to glide around with in ways that would become more of a thing with Breath of the Wild. But yeah, and the sequel was like, what if we made a bigger version of that and it wasn't as successful of a game? But still a really neat one. So I believe they're basically getting the rights to these so that they, will become the publishers of these games on, Steam and PSN and all that. And the potential of doing new versions or remasters or whatever, because all of these are Cold Fear is 20 years old, and the newest one is from 2016, so almost 10 years old. So these games that probably could use a remaster to look real nice on newer consoles.
Yep.
And that's something that's Atari really wants to do right now. Especially since they have Digital Eclipse and Night Dive Studios who do mostly just that. So there's that. That's some neat news. Now we're surprising that Ubisoft would want to offload some small properties that Atari would be interested in and make some money off of that. Because they're not making a ton of money on things right now. They've been talking about selling off some properties as needed. So there's that. Let's see. Yeah, we got Crystal Dynamics news. Not in a good way. They have laid off an unknown number of staff. I assume in the wake of Perfect Dark's cancellation, there's a bunch of people there that no longer have anything to work on, and if the new Tomb Raider game does not have roles for them, I assume a bunch of people end up getting laid off at this point, as they're kind of owned by Embracer Group. Yeah, I'm working on the new Tomb Raider with Amazon Games and all that, but that has been that was 2022, so been 3 years at least since we've that was being worked on, but they've not shipped anything since 2020 with Marvel's Avengers, which was not a great title, but yeah. So yeah, there's some stuff there. Wishing the best for those people, and hopefully for Crystal Dynamics to do well with their next game. Because they're one of those studios that's been around for a very long time and hopefully don't get embraced.
What it do they have a title in development right now that they've announced?
Yeah, new Tomb Raider
Oh, right.
with Amazon.
Ah, that's right.
Which that's as much as we know.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. Now we got some more industry news as lawsuits and such are going around. Unknown Worlds announced that they have filed a new lawsuit against the former founders of the Subnautica team, Charlie Cleveland, Max McGuire, and Ted Gill, alleging that they have downloaded and I guess stolen a bunch of confidential files.
Wow,
Claiming over
this is
170,000 confidential files.
man, I swear this story, it just keeps getting weirder and weirder the longer it goes on.
Yeah.
Like this is for that sounds crazy.
Yeah.
Like it sounds insane.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is kind of in addition to the main lawsuit about them suing that they were getting fired from their jobs from Krafton over claims of them, abandoning their duties running the studio and Subnautica 2 developments to pursue their own things they wanted to do. And this just goes on top of that. So yeah, that's fun. Want to see what else comes out of this, but yeah, this claim they claim that they downloaded substantial volumes of undisclosed confidential company information on their way out the door, saying that they grew more active in the week before their threatened termination. McGuire downloaded nine, almost 100,000 company files in the days leading up to his termination, and Cleveland downloaded another 72,000. Cleveland stopped in the middle of his activity. His last download from the company's system occurred just 8 minutes before the company terminated his system access. These downloads were by far the largest downloads for each of the three key employees at any time since at least 2022, which I imagine it was probably personal files. Could be company files, but might be one of those things where they worked on personal things on their company machines, and then the company considers all that their own, and they probably disagree with that. So I don't know. They don't describe what these files were, just company files. So who knows? This is the company side, so they're very much going to take their own view of things.
I'm hoping that what's his name? Everybody's favorite journalist in gaming is keeping track of all this because I think this is going to end up being the source for his next book. Like,
yeah.
this is insane.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, they're seeking damages for wrongful conduct, proved at trial alongside its attorney's fees, costs, and expenses, as well as pre- and post-judgment interest.
Mm-hmm.
It then wants to be awarded all rights, title, and interest in any intellectual property developed by Cleveland, McGuire, yeah. and Gill during their employment at Unknown Worlds, including mm-hmm. all movie scripts, movie footage, game design, game code, play tests, or other software development.
Yeah, so
that should tell you what those files were probably, in you know, what that entailed. So
mm-hmm.
they seem to believe that those are their own property, which it's dumb to do that on your company computer.
Mm-hmm.
But then, if you're not expecting to be fired, you know, for several years,
yeah,
you might make that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. More fun.
Oh man.
And speaking of fun, Roblox is getting sued by the yep. state of Louisiana
mm-hmm.
for failing to protect children.
Yep.
Sort of the wake of all the news about the various issues the platform has in protecting children from predatory yeah. threats and all that. This is
yeah. This shit was a long time coming. I gotta tell you just right off the bat because, I mean, people have this isn't none of this is new. People have been talking about the dangers inherent in Roblox pretty much since Roblox itself has existed. It, you know, especially after it became really popular. Yeah, it is just they do not take the security of their users very seriously. And once, you know, you started having like whistleblowers and people like actively showing like, yeah, that this is it's not only is it bad, but like in some ways, the Roblox themselves are like actively facilitating it. And basically, Roblox just kind of doubles down and then tries to sue those whistleblowers into oblivion. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's not good.
Yeah, I feel like ever since that report came out talking about how the game is built on child labor.
Yep, it is. They've been
very much trying to do things to counter that narrative. And, mm-hmm. Enhancing its security and all that, and I think yeah. since this was filed, they've made more announcements about improvements yeah. they're making.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't think you necessarily do that if you don't think you're not doing super well at it.
Yeah, like too little, too late, buddy.
And I've seen lawyers talking about this that there's potentially hundreds of lawsuits coming.
Oh, I would not thing. Be. I would put it higher. I'd say there were thousands that are coming. Because yeah. this is just, oh, it's bad.
Yeah. So, yeah, they mentioned here it was filed on August 14th in Louisiana's 21st Judicial District mm-hmm. To hold Roblox Corporation accountable for allegedly facilitating and distributing, quote-unquote, child sexual abuse material and enabling the, quote-unquote, sexual exploitation of minors in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
That accuses Roblox Corp of failing to implement basic safety controls to protect child users
mm-hmm.
and neglecting to inform users of the dangers they could encounter on the popular UGC platform, user-generated content.
Mm-hmm.
Saying here, for years, defendant has knowingly enabled and facilitated the systemic sexual exploitation and abuse of children across the United States, including Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Through willful disregard and deceptive practices, defendant has permitted and perpetuated an online environment in which child predators thrive, directly contributing to the widespread victimization of minor children in Louisiana. And so, yeah. Hard yeah. to deny that they haven't been sort of willfully neglected mm-hmm. in a lot yeah. of these areas.
Yeah. I mean, when your entire business model is essentially built on child labor, you're already morally dubious by definition.
Yeah, and I saw a stat that they pushed at some point, I think in like 2020,
mm-hmm.
that their audience in the U.S. comprised half of all minors under the age of 16.
Yep.
Which is like, Jesus Christ, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
and seeing how they don't do a lot to really protect privacy for people,
mm-hmm.
Especially having a lot of voice chat stuff in the game in ways it's like, ooh, that's not great. And especially the way that people create, let's say, a lot of games or experiences in there that are like, well, let's go play around in the bathroom,
mm-hmm.
And do all kinds of weird shit like that. So, yeah. That's not too surprising.
Yeah.
And I expect it's not going to be the last lawsuit we see on this front.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. There you go. And the last, or the next to last here, we got another studio founded by a former BioWare dev, this time Rich Vogel. I'm not sure what his BioWare role was, but he founded this studio called T-Zero Entertainment that has been shut down in the wake of NetEase ceasing its partnership with the studio, essentially, you know, ceasing funding them and supporting them and all that. And then, yeah, he posted on the company's LinkedIn page about NetEase's decision to cease its partnership with T-Zero, saying, "We deeply appreciate NetEase for providing us with both ample runway and support, from helping us find potential investors and to giving us the time and budget to develop our game into a fully playable hands-on demo. It has generated a lot of interest," and they supposedly were saying they were going to help them find a new publisher, but days later, Vogel said that the studio has been shut down, which sucks for them, but also this is a major thing going on with many studios. Especially those being funded by studios from, or companies from China and South Korea and Japan, sort of finding a lot of companies pulling out of supporting Western developers. Imagine all the terror stuff are also causing lots of issues. But yeah, this is just the financial market for supporting a lot of these game development projects just kind of falling through for a lot of small developers. Unfortunately, this is another one. So yeah, that's a shame. Wish the people there the best and finding new work and whatnot. So yeah, there you go. But yeah, for this week, we'll end on a more positive note. 450 Diablo developers from the main Diablo team have voted to unionize under the CWA. I believe the same group that a number of the other Blizzard Entertainment groups are localizing under. The vote concluded on the evening of August 27th, workers either signing union cards or indicating they wanted to unionize through a portal. That means that workers will unionize under CWA Local 9510 in Irvine, California, Local 1118 in Albany, New York, and Local 6215 in Austin, Texas. One of the main three teams that work on Diablo games. The union has been recognized by Microsoft and will represent a wide variety of disciplines across Blizzard Entertainment, including designers, engineers, artists, and support staff.
Mm-hmm.
So now the next step is to get a new contract, and that could take a while, as we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
But at least this step helps probably raise morale for a while.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see, but yeah, that is good to know, and wish them all the best.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you have anything to add, Brandon.
Only that, as I've been saying, momentum is on the side of organized labor for the last couple of years, and it's going to keep increasing.
Especially at Microsoft, where they have dozens of developers to unionize. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's going to end up doing it for the show this week.
Yeah.
But yeah, that'll be it. And yeah, we'll be at September by the time we return. So yeah, thank you, Brandon, for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about. And we'll definitely have plenty to talk about. Silksong will be out, so I assume at least one or two of us will have it. And all that. I was having a weird issue with Hollow Knight when I was playing it on the PC versus my Steam Deck.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, the start and select buttons weren't working. At times, like, it felt like I had a cooldown that was randomly designed, where it would work one time, if I was like need to look at the map or something, and then I'd be like, wait, what was I, where was I going? And I hit the select button, it wouldn't work for a while. And boy, that's a harder version of the game to play, where you can't like pause the game or anything. Which I also found out, I think in that session, that when you go to the big map screen, it doesn't pause the game. Enemies just still kind of walk around. I was like, oh, this is worse than I thought. You have to do the start pause thing. I was like, this is weird. But yeah. So Silk Song will be out. Yep. We'll see how that goes. I think I came back and played some more Hollow Knight and it just worked regularly again. So I don't know what the fuck was going on. Maybe some Steam input shit.
Yep.
Being weird. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, for then, feel free to recommend the podcast to friends and family and select strangers who are also excited for Silk Song or any game coming out this week. There's tons of them, so there's probably a game for everybody. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.